It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. With 30 years of sobriety from Tulare, California, let's give a big round of applause for Bubba. 30 years in a row.
I'm Bubba and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I wouldn't say that when I first got around here. I don't know, is there anyone that really doesn't want to be here tonight and kind of unhappy and pissed off? Everybody's ready then, huh? Well, you know, I've been sober for a few years now. By the grace of God, and Alcoholics Anonymous and the California Highway Patrol. So a lot of the old-timers that are here, they're probably tired of hearing my story because I haven't changed it in 30 years. I don't want to ever change it. And Cliff Roach told me that when I was just a year sober, and I was a warm-up speaker for him at St. Paul's Church, and he heard my story. He told me, you don't ever change his story. That's yours. It belongs to you. Live with it. And I remember those little things like that. But the reason I ask if anyone was pissed off to be here tonight is because when I got here, I was pissed off. I didn't want to be here. I had a bad attitude from the beginning. I was full of denial. I was ignorant to what the disease of alcoholism is, and don't call me an alcoholic, you know. I had to be pissed off because the night I got my DUI, I was about four or five blocks from my home when Highway Patrol threw the lights on me. And I was driving this little 72 Chevy stepside truck that I had restored. And I had put a lot of time and a lot of money in it. And I didn't want it to be towed. So I just let them follow me to my house. Alcoholic thinking, you know. Anyway, I got to the house. And they did the routine with me, you know. Gave me the sobriety check, and one of the highway patrolmen was a younger gentleman, and then there was an elderly guy there, elderly like me now, and one wanted to take me in, and the other didn't, you know, and they asked me, well, the one that didn't want to take me in, the young guy, he says, well, you're not going anywhere else tonight, are you? And I said, hell no, the bar's just closed, you know. But the older one, he says, no, I think we ought to take him. I didn't pay much attention, but my wife at that time, my ex-wife now, she was standing on the porch. And he turned around, the elderly one, and he asked her, he says, Mrs. Weatherford, what do you think? Shall we take him or leave him? And her exact words were, take the son of a bitch and keep him. So that got me off on a bad mood, upset to begin with. And then I'm fortunate to be here because that next morning when I got released from there in Visalia, I had a small business at the time, and I had to walk to my shop from when they released me. And I didn't realize how sick I was, but I got to my shop, but I had to stop a few times on the way because I didn't know it, but I was passing kidney stones. And I got to my shop and had a vehicle I could drive. And so I got to my doctor over in Tulare. And he admitted me immediately to the hospital. He said, "Your blood pressure, you're not supposed to be alive." And unknowing to me, I was not only passing kidney stones, but I was having withdrawals from alcoholism. And to my best knowledge, I had never felt that before. Though I had drank for a lot of years and drank heavily. And my drink of choice was Jack Daniels with a good silver bullet to wash it down, you know. And so the doctor kept me in that hospital for about 8 or 9 days. I don't know, one or the other. But he got me through a period where they were going to blast the stones in the morning before they blasted. The morning they were going to blast the stones, about 4:30 that morning, I passed them. And so I started feeling a little better. But still, you know, my guts was, I thought they were inside out. I had never had that feeling. And I never want that feeling again in my life. And I was at the point where my doctor took care of me, got me to a point where I could keep some Jell-O and a little bit of juice down. And I started feeling a little better, and he started explaining to me that, "Jerry, I've told you over the years that you have a drinking problem, you should try to do something about it." And he says, "You always told me where I could put my information, you know, when I told you that." And he says, "But you're at a point now, we've run some tests on you." And he says, "Your enzyme readings and other readings are at the point where you're real close to cirrhosis of the liver." And he explained to me later that he says, "If you will do what I tell you to do here, and then when you leave here, you get to Alcoholics Anonymous and you do what they tell you to do." He says, "If you will stay on this diet," he put me on a real bland diet, "and exercise," he says, "your liver is the only organ in your body that has a chance of rejuvenating itself." And at that time, that was true. And so that wasn't a spiritual awakening, but it was a damn rude awakening, you know. And he kept me there in the hospital, got me through all of this. And, you know, and I'm starting to feel better. I can keep a little bit, you know, I can keep some potatoes and gravy down and some, a few soft foods. And this alcoholic thinking kicks in. And I, you know, after he's told me this, and but I told him I'm not an alcoholic, you know, and he brought that up. And anyway, my thinking was, if I can just get my truck here, and I can get down to Tommy's Lounge and have a couple of double Daniels and waters on the rocks, I could think better, you know. And God, how stupid I was. But anyway, I didn't do that. And later on, when I got a sponsor, I asked him, "Why didn't I do that?" And he told me, he says, "That was God doing for you what you couldn't do for yourself at that time." And I believe that. I firmly do. But anyway, when I got going through this deal with this DUI, of course, I had to go to alternative services. And the lady I talked to, a little Latino lady, and her name was Rose. I'll never forget her. And at the time, I hated her. But she gave me 4 of those little white cards, you know, 4 lines on them. And she says, "You have to attend 12 AA meetings." And boy, I wanted to reach across that desk and slap the hell out of her, you know. Because I'm not an alcoholic, Ben. And But anyway, I didn't, and later on I got to apologize and make amends to that woman and tell her that it was the best thing that ever happened to me after I got into this program, and did a whole lot of work, and did a whole lot of drinking, so I had a whole lot of work to do. But, you know, I got two men came to me, and they told me that you need I guess they knew of me or whatever, but they said you need two sponsors, and we're both going to sponsor you. Oh, okay. And it was a good thing those two men got a hold of me, because they tell you in the beginning to stay away from slippery places and slippery friends. Well, my muffler shop was probably the most slipperiest place in town, you know, for partying and raising hell. And so they would come to my shop, and I have to back this up a minute. I couldn't drive for 6 months because I refused to have a test the night I got taken to the jail here in Visalia. And I found out a little later on that a California driver's license is a privilege. So I went 6 months at that time without a driver's license, and I had to hire a young boy that was in high school, and he had been expelled for different reasons, and I had to pay him to drive me around and sweep my shop for me. You know, I'm going to get my money's worth. But anyway, these two guys would come to my shop in the morning, and we would have talks, and we would get on our knees and we would pray. And then one of them would go and take care of his business, and then when he would come back later, then the other one would leave, and he would take care of his business. And they did that for about 4 weeks. And they said, you're too dangerous to be by yourself. And I'm glad those men did that, because they ended up being my sponsors. And one of them died sober. But he knew me from the time I was, we were about 8 or 9 years old. And later in our lives, we had partied together and family things together. And he knew me pretty well, so he wouldn't let me slide with anything. The other sponsor, he wasn't quite as hard. So I felt like, man, I could get by this guy a little bit, you know. But I'm glad Butch was there. And so anyway, they're bringing me to meetings. And, you know, I knew when it was time, because at the front door I'd hear a, you know. And they're hauling me to meetings my first 6 months because I didn't have that driver's license. And I was starting to pay attention to a certain degree, but I still had a lot of denial. And I had things like, how can I truly be? I'd heard a lot of guys talk around the tables, and there was a lot of people in these rooms at that time that I knew and were customers of mine over the years, and they're telling their story, I'm really glad they were there, because it made me pay attention. And I got a little bit of hope out of that. If these guys can do it, and they're big-time business people, I'm just a small business owner, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. That gave me some hope. And I'm glad they were there. But anyway, they were hauling me to these meetings, and we were. They took me out to Farmersville. And it was a crazy, loud, noisy meeting at that time, but people were having a lot of fun, you know. One of my sponsors' sponsor was chairing the meeting that night. I'll say his last name because he died sober, to Don Wilson. And Don was he was a chairperson that night, and he talked about his topic was going to be on the incomprehensible demoralization, and that we go through before we get to this program, through this disease. And I had never shared in a meeting before, because, like I say, I was PO'd to be here. I didn't think I was an alcoholic, and I wouldn't. They'd call on me, and I would say, for about a month and a half, I'd say, "My name's Jerry, and I'm here for information only. Thank you." And I get teased to this day. I get teased about that. But, you know, I didn't realize it, but at the time I was being real honest. And that's as honest as I could be at that time. But hanging, that night was a night that I look back on now, and I surrendered to this program that night, because Don was talking about that incomprehensible demoralization. And believe me, folks, I had been there. And he talked earlier that night, he's about the spirituality that we can get here and that we can use in our lives. And that all really made a lot of sense to me that night. And Don, he was looking at me when he said, "If you don't want to feel that incomprehensible demoralization, you don't ever have to feel that way again, as long as you don't drink and stay sober, you know." And then he called on me, and I had never shared before. And where I come from, my dad was German and Irish. He drank Irish whiskey and had that German temperament, you know. And there were six boys in my family and one girl. And us boys weren't allowed to cry. If we cried, well, you'd get one of these, you know. Strong hand he raised us by, and that's the way it was. And I stood up that night when he called on me, and I guess that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself at that time, because I stood up and I says, "I don't know what I am, but I do know I need help." And I had about 20 telephone numbers and business cards and cards that people had and all that were given to me that night. And I used those cards, and I talked to people, but anyway, that was the beginning of, that's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't, you know, I didn't want to work this program, but the program worked me, because I stayed around and I did what people told me to do. And my sponsors, they made me, when I was, one year sober, I had to, become secretary of a meeting. Cliff Roach was in town. He was a speaker at St. Paul's. And he said, the sponsor told me, "You have to be the warm-up speaker." And, you know, that was a lot put on a person, I thought, at young in the program like that. And I didn't know a lot of the people in the program at the time. And, I did the things that these men told me to do. And we got into that big book. And when we got into the big book, we had a 12 by 12 right there with it. And we went back and forth. If something wasn't clearly understood, we went from one to the other. I worked the steps of this program with these men. And then they told me, he says, "That was the easy part. Now you got to learn how to live them." And so we started applying it in my life the best I could. And it was It was the real simple things in the beginning, the sayings like easy does it one day at a time and stuff that I could relate to. And when these gentlemen were staying at my shop and making sure I didn't get in out of hand or something and stick around and do what I was supposed to do, I got an upset customer and I got irate with him, and I was cussing and told him to leave my business. You know, I didn't want his business. And so after the man left, Butch told me, he says, you know, you've got to pray for that man and ask God to forgive you for doing a customer like that. And so the next day, first thing Butch asked me when I got to the shop, did you pray for that man? And I said, yes, I did. He said, what did you pray? I said, I prayed that God would kill him. You know? And you know what Butch's response was? That's a beginning. You know? And that's kind of how things happen in this program. When you first deal with them, if you do deal with them, that's a beginning. And, you know, after that day, I had been in my business before I got sober 15 years. And then after I was there 10 years after I got sober. And I never, I had never thrown another person out of my shop after that. And the first 15 years we drank, did outside issues, and all those things that us alcoholics do. And the party, it was, some people said it was a den of iniquity, you know. But I got to make up for that. The last 10 years I was there, we had a lot of dirty deeds on that office floor. And, you know, reading and helping people through this big book and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a lot of praying going on. And it was a different place than what it was. And, you know, I was very fortunate. I've always been fortunate as far as God looked out for me. I always had a good position. I could do what I wanted. And Bill kind of reminds me of this, but I had to travel a lot for the large corporation I worked for. And so I was gone a lot, and I just, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I really didn't understand who I was and why am I doing this, all these things that I'm doing, because I'm really not happy. But I never had any idea that it was because I was an alcoholic and I didn't have a drink in me or some other chemical. When I was clean and sober, I was just unhappy and miserable. You know, and God, like I say, God has always been good to me. I always had a good position and worked for a large corporation. And I did things like before I went to that corporation, I worked for a company that underwriters for servicemen's group life insurance. And doing that, I had a lot of freedom. And my brother, just late brother, just younger than I, we were partners in a ski boat. And we worked for a man that had an airplane and his pilot license, and when we worked, that's when we went to work. So I got to, my favorite thing to do at that time was water skiing and drag boats, you know, racing that boat at the drags and doing the things I like to do. So we got to live on the Colorado River below Parker Dam in Parker town of Parker, Arizona, and it was just a one-party place. and I took advantage of that to the max. But I had to, you know, when I got here, and I had to change a lot of things. I was, I guess you could say, self-spoiled, because I got to drag race cars, I got to race motorcycles, I got to race the boats, I got to do all the things that I wanted to do, and I thought that was all owed to me, you know, because don't you know how hard I worked for it? But, you know, all those excuses we use, but that's not true. And then I've always been a car nut. I always loved cars and speed and all this stuff. And God saw fit for me to be able to do that. I still do that today. I'm retired now. I'll be retired 16 years in February. And I still have my street rods, and I'm down to three, and that's been a big part of my life. When I retired, I'm glad I had something like that to do, because it kept me busy. And I from the time I retired, I built and rebuilt four cars, sold one, and kept the other three. Built two for myself, and my wife wanted one, so I built one for her, you know. But that's the root of our problem. The book tells me is selfishness and self-centeredness. And that was me. I was selfish to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. I didn't get married to my first wife until I was 28 years old, because I had a good position, like I said, and I had all the money I wanted, and I wanted to spend it on me, you know. But then I was 6 years sober, and all the things I did, I had been married almost 27 years at that time. And all the things, the hurt and the selfishness, self-centeredness, the cheating I did on my wife and everything, caught up with me. And 6 years sober, she asked me for a divorce. So we went through marriage counseling. And finally, the marriage counselor told us at the last meeting we had with him, he says, "I told you I would work with you folks as long as I saw some progress, and I think we're getting somewhere." He says, "I'm not going to keep you here just to take your money." And not that they don't enjoy that, but, you know, he says, "You know, what you two have been through," he says, "you're lucky your marriage lasted as long as it did." And he recommended that we divorce. And for the first time in my life, that's the first time anyone ever did anything like that to me. I would allow anyone to hurt me like that, you know. And I was devastated. I was. That was the hardest thing I ever went through, because I have a son by my wife's previous marriage. I've had him since he was a year old. And I had a daughter of ours. And I consider them both ours. In fact, I have a better relationship today with my stepson than I do my own daughter. And I thought the world of my daughter, but she has a problem. She's one of us, and she's just as bullheaded and stubborn. She takes after her dad. I don't have much of a relationship now that I used to have with my children, even after that divorce. That was the most devastating thing about the divorce, was the way it affected my children. So, anyway, we had things going along pretty well until I saw my daughter, and she went through a divorce. I helped her all I could, more than I should, people tell me. But anyway, she got into partying, drinking, and she had two daughters. And those granddaughters mean the world to me. And I could not condone what she was doing and some of the things she was doing and how it was affecting my granddaughters. So finally I took it, I accepted, you know, that I wore that serenity prayer out. But I couldn't take it any longer being around her. And I told her I still loved her. But I says, I don't like you worth a damn right now. And for her birthday, holidays, I didn't even contact her. And that's been working on me. And my wife has been helping me a lot with this. And for the first time in 5 years, Thanksgiving morning, I called her. Wished her a happy Thanksgiving. Told her I loved her. So, maybe that's beginning. I hope. But, you know, sobriety has been really good to me. God has been good to me, always has. I left him. He never left me. And I get to help people today and share from my heart. I've been through cancer, 3 surgeries, heart procedures twice, and through all of that, I've never thought about picking up drinks, you know, and I couldn't do that without my higher power. So, you know, I'm just one of a bunch of people. And when I feel most comfortable is when I'm around a bunch of recovering alcoholics. You know, you guys, there's people in this room that, you know me, have known me for a while, and some have went back out, some have come back, and I never got on any of their cases or gave them hell for going back out. They went back out because they had their own reasons for going back out. But I knew I had to stay sober and be here and be their friend so when they come back, they could come to me. You know, and that's the way I feel today. And that's the difference between the selfish, self-centered asshole I was when I walked through these doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I used to say, and do unto others as they do unto you, only do it first. And get one up on them. You know? But I've learned to channel those feelings, and you know, I had a real sharp tongue. I was in sales and marketing most of my life, and I had to be up on every all time, you know. So I had to be a step above everyone when I was in front of them while I was talking to them. And someone used to tell me, "Hey, I'm sorry." And I'd say, "I know you are. How's the rest of your family?" You know, just dig real, you know. And I'm not that person today. I'm ashamed to tell you that. But I have to tell you that for me to stay sober and for me to live in God's eyes and live the way I live and try to live His will. And I don't complicate my program, have been from the beginning, and I don't complicate it now. The best tool I have, and a lot of people disagree at that time, they were quite popular, but the 24-hour day book. And a lot of people say, well, that's not AA, that comes from Hazelden. I don't care where it comes from. My sponsor gave me that, and I know it's the one he gave me, because on the inside cover it says $7.50. You know, they cost a lot more than that today. But I use that every morning. Every morning. I take that with me when we travel. And that's another thing. By working this program, I've been able to retire. My wife and I have got to... I've remarried. And we get to travel and do things that I never thought I'd get to do. And it's, I take that whole book with me. And whether I'm on a cruise line or wherever I'm at, in the morning, that's the first thing I do. And I don't feel right until I do that. And this morning, my wife, she volunteers, Quia Delta, she's in the guild there for the women, and she was gone. They had a function this morning, so I got to be by myself. I spent about an extra half hour in there today just going through, you know, what I thought I needed to reflect back on for the year. And that little book really helps me. And everyone I've sponsored in this program, they have a 24-hour day book. There's a lot of people I didn't sponsor that I gave 24-hour day book to, because it's simple, to the point, and it gets you to the point of where I have to be. So I know it's only by the grace of God, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm sober today. And I never, in my wildest dreams, never thought that I could be sober for 30 years. And who the hell would want to be sober for 30 years? You know? But the only thing bad about being sober those 30 years, you know, I was 48 years old, almost 49 when I got here. And this month, the 15th, I'll be 79 years old. You know? That alone is a blessing from God for a person like me that used, abused, and took advantage of people and everything I did before I got here. That's a real blessing. Okay? God sees fit for me to have this life. And so that's my story. I'm, one thing, Jim, I told him I would do it tonight, Jim Kay. He asked me, he says, his friend asked me, are you Bubba? And I said, yeah, or Jerry. And he says, Jim says, where'd you get that name, Bubba? Well, I got into, before I retired, I got into tournament bass fishing. And again, God saw fit that I could do this. And I got to travel the whole Western United States and tournament bass fish. And I was fishing Western Bass Tournament, and we had, in that particular circuit, we had six tournaments to fish that year. And you could throw one out, keep your best five, and that would be Angler of the Year. And, I won five tournaments and finished second in the other one. But I did have big fish in that. When I finished second, you know. So anyway, Bobby Bonds, baseball player, his brother is Robert Bonds. And Robert was a football player. Played on the New York Giants, got a knee blown out, and he became a coach and a professor over at Cal Poly College. So I got to meet him through a friend, and he fished in that circuit, and he was a big, great big guy, and unlike me, he's got a real big voice, you know, and he was a master of ceremonies at our, for that year when the awards were given out, and he called me up, and he says, you guys all call him Jerry, but he says, in football, anybody kicks our ass this bad, we call him Bubba. And that's how I got that name. And the guy that takes care of my boat, I would do all the welding so on his vehicles, and he would take care of my boat and service it. And he came to my shop that week and picked up my boat and took it to Reuben, the pinstriper. And I had Jerry Weatherford written up there, and Tulare, you know, like all the guys did on their boats. He took all of that off, and in real big, bold, block letters, drop shadowed. In quotation marks, he had Bubba put on it. And, you know, that's not bragging. That's. I told Jim I would tell him that tonight. And that's how I got that name, Bubba. But people started calling me Bubba because I was proud of that jacket, my club jacket, and Sierra Bassmasters. And it was a beautiful coat, and I want my favorite coat. And so I wore that to my first meetings when I was first coming around Alcoholics Anonymous, and everybody saw Bubba on there, and I've been Bubba ever since. But, you know, the main thing is that I know Bubba and Jerry both are alcoholics. And I'm real grateful to be sober today and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And God, I hope if you guys are new in this program, there was a few newcomers came up tonight, and I hope that you can find through this program what I've found here and have a life like I've had, because it's really, I'm a blessed person. And Bill, thank you for asking me to come tonight.